From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
It was Labor Day evening in Kensington, which is a neighborhood that's pretty hard hit by the opioid crisis.
Max Marin is a reporter for WHYY's Billy Penn.
Police observed a man jump onto the driver's side door of a moving vehicle and reach in, and they pulled over to intervene on the conflict. The car sped off, and the man stayed behind, and he was behaving erratically.
And Max, we can see from the cell phone tape that people thought that the police were going to harm this man.
Come on, hey!
Please don't shoot him!
Somebody out there gonna shoot him!
Danny, come on, Danny, chill out!
Kill you, bro!
And police say he had a box cutter in his hand. And, you know, within a few seconds, you hear the gunshots.
Yo! Ow! Ow!
He did survive, but this story of the shooting has kind of unfolded, turned into a bigger thing. This, to me, became this kind of question of, well, how is the department, dealing with, how are officers dealing with these interactions, and why are they being called to handle these situations?
Why are police the first responders in these kinds of incidents? Today on The Why, crisis response. So how did Darren Lee get in this kind of situation? Who is he?
I talked to his father after the incident and tracked him down, and he sort of had come public talking about his son's mental health issues.
As his father, I've been through it all.
Darren Lee is 31 years old. He's an adult, but his father says he has struggled and been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, and the father is making it very clear that the behavior that he saw that night is, one, yes, his son's struggling with drug use, but also just a man who is not normally, even when he's not using drugs, receptive to commands, who doesn't communicate well, doesn't really understand what's going on at all times.
You can see it was just getting worse. And I'm not talking about the substance, I'm talking about his medical condition.
His father also said that he was taking antipsychotic medication and that he had kind of been going on and off of it and going to outpatient groups.
He was going to therapy. He was in his group. You know what I'm saying?
Another factor I had found in my reporting is that Lee had been incarcerated the month prior to the shooting on an unrelated assault charge, some altercation he had had with a SEPTA driver in North Philly, and he had spent about 2 weeks on State Road in county lockup there. Lo and behold, when Daryl gets out, it's a week later when he has this encounter with the police.
So was this the right decision, Max, to let Darren Lee out of jail 2 weeks later? I mean, did he get the right mental health support when he was in jail?
A lot of advocates who work with people in the prison system, especially people with mental health and substance abuse issues, they say that the level of care within the prison system, maybe unsurprisingly, isn't that great. And they are also dealing with large quantity of people coming in and out. And it's hard to tell who's getting what. The Department of Prisons has done a lot of reforms around getting people medication for withdrawal and for substance abuse issues, particularly with opioids. They now medicate people with buprenorphine in jail. But when it comes to people with just medical diagnoses, it's really difficult to get an assessment of what they're going through beyond just what they say. Advocates say this sort of just does open up the question of saying, Philadelphia is working to depopulate its jails and get people out. A lot of the people that are ending up back in there are these same people that have mental health issues and are going through crises and going through these things in their lives.
So this becomes a cyclical thing.
Right. So, I spoke with Ruth Scheffner, who is the director of something called the Gold Ring Reentry Initiative, which is a group out of Penn that's working with social workers and kind of training them to start working with these at-risk populations around reentry issues and getting them into housing.
Lack of stability among people exiting with substance use and mental health issues, and that gets particularly exacerbated by a lack of stable housing.
What she says she sees anecdotally is that, these people with mental health and substance abuse are just increasingly becoming a larger and larger percentage of the jail population, and they're not really getting put in contact with the services that they need either before or after they get in jail.
A big difficulty is uncertainty about when people are going to get out, which makes it really difficult to kind of proactively coordinate services and have them lined up upon discharge date.
So really, you do just sort of have this recurring pipeline of a lot of people coming in and doing short sentences.
But why is that? Why aren't they getting in contact with the supports that they need? Is it because people just don't really know what they need when they go in, or why is that?
I mean, I talked to the one of the deputy commissioners at the prison, and they said, you know, they have a fully licensed medical facility in the detention center on State Road, and that they are providing, you know, whatever they need. They won't discharge people if they're not showing like a level of like mental cognizance to be like back out on the streets.
This is The Why.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Annette John Hall. We're talking to Billy Penn's Max Marin about an incident in which a man suffering from mental health issues was shot by the police in Kensington. So Darren got shot in Kensington, right, which is what a lot of people call the opioid epicenter. The fact that the police know this and that the neighborhood is sort of labeled as that, did that play a role in what happened?
The police department has done a lot to decrease the number of shootings year over year. Since 2012, it looks like 80% fewer shootings in which officers are discharging weapons against people, you know. But this year, in particular, I think some community advocates in Kensington are growing more concerned because this was the second time this summer that an officer had shot somebody on the street who was a known entity in the neighborhood.
And here's what's happening. Surveillance video shows the moments before an unarmed man was shot on a Philadelphia street. A Philadelphia police officer.
There was a homeless man who was panhandling cars who were waiting at a red light, and an plainclothes officer was waiting in his vehicle. And as the guy approaches, the officer claims that the man was screaming and pointing a weapon at him, and the officer just discharged his gun through his own window at the guy and shot him. He didn't die, but, you know, that was another case where people just said, this guy was harmless, I didn't do anything. But still, it's one of these sort of chaotic situations that are pretty commonplace in the neighborhood where there's so much, like, drug activity and so many people living on the street. One of those community advocates who's kind of speaking out against the way the police handled this was Chorito Morales.
I'm a nurse, and I'm also an activist, and I have a background in behavioral health.
Chorito told me that these like shootings, you know, demonstrate that the officers really don't have the training to intervene during these mental health crises and substance abuse issues.
The police is not trained, and if they are trained, they don't want to use that. They want to overpower people because they are the police.
And she says that she sees it time and time again, and, you know, most often in cases where it's obviously not ending with use of lethal force, but that they just don't have the training. They don't understand the community. They don't understand the people there, that it's really just become a very strained relationship between the community there and the police.
I don't think they understand the severity of the issues and what not to do and what to do.
That's strange to me, Max, because it would seem to me that officers would need some kind of training to handle these kinds of encounters.
I reached out to the department to ask for comment on this particular case and also for a larger picture about what sort of training the officers are receiving to handle situations like this. They don't comment on specific cases that are still ongoing investigations, but they did refer me to some of their policies, this crisis response policy, which is kind of like a procedural list of actions to take in these situations. This policy applies to a wide range of situations, somebody who's barricaded in a building, as well as, in this case, somebody with what they call a severe mental disability. And the instructions for officers in the policy is to not be afraid to retreat from a situation and, you know, give the person more space if they're behaving erratically or if they need it, and goes down the list of, like, you know, at what point you can apply lethal force. And they're investigating this right now. Again, they're not going to comment on it, but these are the criteria with which they'll sort of be weighing the officer's decision-making in this situation. When you listen to the tape, you can hear some of the bystanders on the street yelling for the officers to tase the individual.
Just tase him! Just do your tase!
They keep saying, he's just high, just tase him. Not all officers are equipped with tasers at all times, and it wasn't clear if the responding officers on the ground indeed had them that night. beyond that, the training to handle situations with mental health issues and substance abuse issues is pretty limited. From my conversations with police officers who aren't authorized to speak on the record about these things, they will say they don't feel equipped to handle these situations, and they wish that they didn't have to respond to a situation where it would be better handled by a mental health specialist.
Are there any real calls for accountability here?
Lee's family has retained an attorney, Shaka Johnson, to represent them in this case. Obviously, he's going to have to deal with Lee's criminal charges as well as maybe any action they want to take against the police department over their handling of this case. You know, and then there were also these concerns were kind of echoed by the community during a demonstration that happened the Friday after he was shot.
Today, we shut this intersection down to say Darren Lee should not be charged with aggravated assault.
And people just really calling for a more of a level of accountability. A lot of people like to paint this issue as people just saying, you know, no to the police and no to law enforcement. No, I mean, community members like Chirito are saying they want to build better trust with the law enforcement. They want to have a good relationship. They do need the police. But the conversation, she says, needs to kind of happen in a more productive way.
It's not to have a warrant with the police. It's because we need to be safe. And if you want all this criminality to stop, we have to retrain the police and we have to start engaging with the community the proper and right way.
Has there been any talk about reforms on this issue? Who do we look to in situations like this? If the police don't want to be first responders, and they shouldn't be, and the community doesn't necessarily want the police to come in and escalate situations like this, who should we look to?
Most officers would say this has just been one of the most difficult parts of the job, is showing up to these types of situations and also domestic situations and having to dismantle them without the proper resources they need. And from the other side of it, the community was saying, we don't necessarily want a police officer here. There is, you know, a lot of the advocates would say the police officer should be the last line of defense when you have an individual who has already become very violent, and that's when law enforcement should be called. There's not a lot of initiatives that I've heard being discussed around how to get unarmed specialists on the front lines dealing with these situations. Other cities have experimented with putting more of those social services on the front lines, but Philadelphia isn't quite there yet.
Well, Max, this is really important stuff. Thanks for your reporting on all this.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Binyakov, Alex Stern, and Xavier Lopez, under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari. Tweet me at AnnetteJH. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.